Today's edition of the Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by Raffel & Brown Window Fashions. Update your home by checking out this week's sale on a full selection of Hunter Douglas products. Visit raffel-brown.com for more details. The Capital Daily is currently seeking people experiencing homelessness to take part in a long-form story to document them over several months. In the story, participants will be required to be photographed to document the effects of homelessness and be followed up on several months later to see the progress made in that time frame. If you are interested in this or know of somebody who would like to participate, contact Capital Daily reporter Anna J. James via anna@capnews.ca. Hi, I'm Ben Waterworth and welcome to the Thanksgiving edition of the Capital Daily Podcast for Monday, October 12th, 2020. Today on the podcast,
I remember when he first came out of the scene and was just, it kind of changed everything in the same way that someone like Jimi Hendrix changed everything.
We chat with legendary Canadian blues guitarist David Gogo about the recent death of Eddie Van Halen, why he decided to start a podcast, and learning about his very unique manager. David Gogo is one of Canada's greatest blues guitarists, with a career spanning more than 20 years and 15 albums. The Nanaimo native has performed on stage with the likes of B.B. King, Johnny Winter, Albert Collins, Bo Diddley and Otis Rush, and has been chosen to open shows for ZZ Top, George Thorogood, The Tragically Hip, Little Feat and Wishbone Ash. Several of his songs have been featured in films and television and have been covered by a variety of artists, most notably Buddy Guy. The bleach bones of my memories. David also is a host of the Soul Bender podcast, which goes into details about key moments from his career, as well as taking listeners on a journey through the blues, seen through the hazy recollections from his life on the road.
Welcome to David Gogo's Soul Bender podcast.
And to chat about his amazing career, his podcast, and the recent passing of Eddie Van Halen, it's a pleasure to welcome David to the show right now. David, thanks very much for your time today.
Lovely to be here.
One thing I'd really like to start off with today, as I mentioned briefly there in the introduction, of course, the late, great Eddie Van Halen sadly passed away last week. Now, I'm not sure if you ever met Eddie, and if so, of course, we can talk about that. But as a guitar virtuoso yourself, tell us non-guitar types what Eddie could do on the instrument that really hadn't been seen before.
Well, I never did meet him. I've been lucky to meet a lot of my guitar heroes and musical heroes. Never met the Ed, but basically, he was just a game changer. I'm 51 years old, so I was already playing guitar and, you know, kind of playing, you know, rock and blues based rock. A lot of like 60s bands were kind of my big influences when I started. So Eddie being older than me, I remember when he first came out of the scene and was just, it kind of changed everything in the same way that someone like Jimi Hendrix changed everything. He just has this radical technique that he developed where he would do what's called finger tapping. So, you know, normally when you play the guitar, one of your hands is plucking the strings and the other hand's on the neck, pressing down on the strings. Well, he used both hands on the neck. So it was almost like playing the guitar as kind of a piano or something. And there had been players in the past that had done a bit of that. There was a guy in the 30s and 40s named Roy Smek. And you can check him out on YouTube. It's just some really cool kind of finger tapping stuff on acoustic instruments. And another notable guy was a guy named Harvey the Snake Mandel. He's still around, but in the kind of late 60s, early 70s, he developed a bit of this finger tapping style. But Eddie just took it into the stratosphere. And that combined with his, you know, he was just an amazing player. And then he was involved with this amazing band that wrote amazing songs, and they made it all the way to the top.
How difficult is finger tapping, David? I mean, is it something that you've tried and had a crack at before?
Well, the way I play guitar, you know, I'm a blues rock guitar player. It's not really suited for that, but I'll do the odd, like really very, very basic finger tap thing. It gives the guitar an interesting voice. The guitar is very an emotional instrument. You know, you're in such command by how you use your hands with the vibrato and how hard you're hitting the string and all these different things. So doing that tap adds a whole, like another voice. I'm very minimal. It is difficult. Now, the only problem was Eddie Van Halen pioneered this radical technique. And it was great, and I love his playing. But unfortunately, every kind of guitar wanker in the world after that, tried to emulate his sound, and then they just did it to death. Whereas he was a very melodic and tasteful player. Some of these shredders, they could just produce this whole generation of what we call shredding guitar play, guitar style. And they were just like, anytime they had a solo, it just had to be a bazillion notes all at once. And it was, a lot of it was done without any thought for taste or any kind of, I don't know. It just kind of was too much for me.
I really also think, when I think of Eddie Van Halen, the hair, of course, and you talk about sort of setting trends and the hair bands of the 80s and everything along those lines. It seems some of that is weirdly coming back. Do you think we're going to see a lot more of the hair bands emerge now with the passing of Eddie as a tribute to him?
Well, I like Steel Panther. Well, see, that was the thing. My son is 21 years old, and we were talking. I showed him yesterday. Van Halen was fun. It was back when rock and roll could still be fun. So I showed him the video for Hot for Teacher, which is hilarious.
Mm.
And they had a good time, especially when they had Diamond David Lee Roth in the band. I mean, it was just, they had a good time all the time, to quote Viv Savage of Spinal Tap.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, Eddie died of cancer at 65. He was surrounded by his family, which, I mean, is kind of a normal way to die, I guess you would say. I guess a lot of us would maybe like it a little bit that way. But if we listen to your podcast, of course, David, we're going to hear a bunch of names, people like Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jimi Hendrix, Elvis, where the death maybe wasn't nearly as conventional, of course. So not to get all morbid here on the show today, but is there a good death for a bluesman or a rock and roller, essentially?
Dying on stage is always kind of intrigued me.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to go out, right?
Yeah, and there's been a few of those. You don't want to make it too dramatic, but there's a couple of guys that just kind of sit down and die.
Yeah.
On the stage. There was this great band back in the day when I first started playing in clubs called the Beat Farmers, and we used to open some shows for them. They're out of California. And their front man was this wild dude named Country Dick Montana. So he was the drummer, but then he'd come out and front the band as a singer for a couple songs. And he did this wild thing where he would wear one of those big, long oilskin jackets and a cowboy hat. People would just douse him in beer as he'd sing these crazy songs. He'd lay on his back and put a bottle of rum between his feet, his cowboy boots, and lift it up and pour it directly into his mouth. And so he was this crazy showman. And he died on stage, and people thought it was part of the goddamn show.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Wow.
He was up in Whistler, and apparently half the audience were there for a paramedics convention, so you couldn't have chosen a better audience to drop in front of.
I'm sure there was a point where somebody in that audience probably thought, well, hang on a minute, this has gone on for a little bit too long. One of us might need to check on him.
Yeah, so apparently they did. It was some kind of an aneurysm. I think he was dead before he hit the floor. But if you were ever going to get saved, it would have been there.
Wow, geez. Which kind of begs a question then. It's sort of, as a blues musician, I mean, do you want to kind of go out in that silence way? Do you want to be in the middle of a great riff or something like that? If you were to go out on stage, how does that go in such a dramatic, or is it a case on the encore? Like, thanks, Victoria, good night, lights go down, and then that's it. Boom, heart stops, you're dead.
I think that's the way, yeah.
Yeah. That's perfect way. Literally, you're out. That's it. Final performance done. There you go.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Way to time that. I mean, you, of course, David, you're a born and bred Nanaimoan. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Wherever your travels take you. I mean, you always come right back here to Vancouver Island, and you've talked a lot about going to the American South to be inspired. But, I mean, is there a reason why you've never relocated somewhere more characteristic of the blues, perhaps? Like, we all love that you're here, of course. We're not saying get rid of you or anything, but why Nanaimo and say not Clarksville or somewhere else like that?
Well, you can just go to those places and then come home. I live on family property that we've been on since 1897, so I've got really strong roots here. And I certainly wouldn't want to be living in America currently, I can tell you that.
No.
Yeah. No, so as much as I like traveling and playing in other towns, home is where the heart is, and I've got real deep roots here. So, yeah, I love going to those places, but this really feels like home for me, and it is.
You talk about touring and everything. Obviously, right now in the midst of this pandemic, of course, tour schedules have been completely gutted. Your own, of course, as well. You're finally starting to get some gigs now. But how has the pandemic affected your playing, either for better or for worse? I mean, has it, do you think, affected people's appreciation for your music at all?
Well, most of the shows that I've been able to do have been very small scale, you know, very small capacity, socially distanced. So, you know, 40, 50 people. So the only way I can do that is solo. I can't afford to pay the band. You know, if you're playing to 20% capacity, you know, it's difficult. And like, I had a whole road trip. I was supposed to record an album with a friend of mine. We were going to do a kind of a live off the floor duo situation. And we had a 24-date tour and it just all got canceled because either A, the venues have decided not to do any more shows this year, at least, you know, at minimum. Or the other thing is, like I said, if you're only playing to 20% capacity, you're only getting 20% of your pay. And usually in the road, 20% of what you're getting paid is going to expenses. So it makes it almost impossible to tour. That being said, last weekend, I went up to Whitehorse for a gig. And it was the first time I'd played an electric show in a very long time. And the biggest thing it did was beat the hell out of my fingers, because no matter how much you maybe, you know, play at home, whether you're songwriting or just, you know, woodshedding, there's nothing like being on stage and that adrenaline and you know, you just put much more into it. And so it was exhausting and it really knocked the hell out of my fingers, but it was great to be back on stage. But I'm just trying to be creative when I'm at home by, I've got about a dozen new songs that I've written and kind of done demo tapes of. You know, I started a podcast just before the pandemic started. That keeps me busy. And yeah, just, you know, trying to keep going.
I also believe selling some T-shirts as well. You're mentioning a little bit to me off air about that as well, David. Tell me a little bit more about the T-shirts that you've got going right now.
It's just hustling some T-shirts. When my last album came out, 17 Vultures, I decided to get some T-shirts made for the first little round of touring. And so, yeah, I'm just trying to figure out a way to pay the bill. So I went on my Facebook music page and held up one of the ones I had left over and said, if anyone's interested in these, you know, I'll get them printed up. And I wanted to see, I didn't want to get a bunch printed up and be out hundreds of dollars. And then I find out nobody wants the bloody things, but no, so the response was great. So we sold a whack of those. So that's, you know, another month of bills paid.
Great.
And I think I'll have to ramp up for the Christmas buying season soon and sell some of my CDs and vinyl.
Perhaps you can do ugly sweaters, David. They're always popular at Christmas. A David Gogo ugly sweater.
There you go. I'm going to steal that idea.
Do it. You're welcome. You can have that one for free.
just a picture of me, and it's ugly enough.
Absolutely. Well, there you go. I'd wear it. You send me one, I'll wear that on Christmas Day. I guarantee it. There you go. What do you think in terms of the pandemic on a wider scale? I mean, do you think this is going to do much to music in general? I mean, for example, say in the 70s, you had the New York City blackout. The whole city, of course, gets looted, and as a result, you got a bunch of cheap, stolen electronic equipment floating around that perhaps indirectly leads to the birth of something like hip hop. So, I mean, do you look back at that period when we basically were forced, the world's musicians, to sit inside for 6 months, when we can look back at this? Do you think there's going to be a knock-on effect on how this will change the industry in the future?
Well, the big thing I'm worried about is the venues and the people that work in them and the technical people. You know, so many of the venues are having to close their doors permanently. So that's worrisome. I had an email this morning with a friend of mine in Holland. I usually go to Holland about once a year. And this guy, he's a drummer. He's played drums with me. But his big gig in the last, say, decade has been a road manager for bands. So he's completely out of work. You know, a guy like me, I can go play someone's 50th birthday party on the weekend for $1,000 for him and his buddies, you know, socially distant. But if you're a lighting technician or something, it's not like someone's going to hire you to come over to their backyard and set up your lights for $1,000, you know? So it's really just, and that's kind of the immediate effect. Artistically, yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, it's made me, I've never ever had this much time at home. So it's nice. They get to play what I call my wall guitars. And those are the nice guitars that usually just hang on the wall. Well, if you're on the road, you ain't playing them. So
yeah,
that could be inspiring. You know, you get to play some of these beautiful axes, and it has been inspiring. And I was lucky enough to get a little money from the provincial government, part of what's it called? Live BC. Anyways, it was money, basically a grant for songwriting. So that gave some validity to that. I don't want something for nothing. So I want to earn my keep. Creative BC, sorry, is what it's called. And that, you know, that made me go, okay, I'm going to earn this money. I'm going to write some songs. So, I mean, if anything, we'll all have albums ready to put out. Hopefully, they'll be, you know, hopefully there'll be venues to play the music at. And here's the thing that is annoying. I see that there was some prick in the British government the other day suggesting that artistic people retrain and find other areas of work. Well, it's not like we've become obsolete. You know, sometimes that happens. Like in photography, people that used to have a photography studio would develop your photos and that. I remember just going, oh, man, that must be so tough. But technology's pushed them out. There's not a need. That's not true with music. People are dying to see live music. People can't wait to see live music. You know, there's still a demand for what we do. So, I mean, that's the thing, you know, retrain, you know, no.
Yeah. Which is going to make some of those gigs when you can eventually play in front of full houses again. I can imagine these are going to be some pumping gigs, basically, with all these people, as you said, who are dying to get out there and see live music again.
Yeah, well, even just the small shows I've done, like I say, I think that, you know, the biggest capacity is 50 people in a room that you usually play for, you know, 150 or 120 or whatever. The response that I was getting was, I was actually kind of surprised. Like people are, they're really, really want to hear it. And they're really grateful that they do get to hear it. So, and I feed off of that, you know, as a performer, you can't help it. But if people, and the only problem was up in Whitehorse is people want to get up and dance, which is strictly forbidden.
Yeah.
And, but you know, you get some of these blues girls, you get a couple of glasses of wine in them and they can't control themselves. They have to get up and boogie.
Whoever thought that Footloose would become realistic one day, right? That's kind of, I think, what a lot of people are taking from this no dancing rules. You mentioned before your podcast starting up one, of course, it's called Soul Bender. What brought about the idea for this, David? Is this something you'd always wanted to have a go at podcasting?
I like podcasts. I listen to them a lot, especially, you know, when I used to be able to go on the road. I mean, touring in Canada, sometimes there's some long drives and, you know, it's really interesting to listen to podcasts. I mostly listen to comedy podcasts or interview podcasts, especially interviews with musicians. But what kind of inspired it, and this was just before the pandemic, we decided to explore it. I've been doing this for a long time now. And I have one band in Nanaimo, one band in Ottawa, and then lately I started hiring some musicians in the prairies. So when you get new people in the van, then the stories come and you start getting to know each other. And I realized that I'd hired a couple players that were, you know, a fair bit younger than me when we were touring in the prairies. And as we were talking on these long prairie drives, you know, they'd mention Stevie Ray Vaughan and I'd have stories about hanging out with him and meeting them. And they were like, wow, I can't believe that. Or, you know, or playing with B.B. King. And, you know, it came to the point where so many people were saying to me, you know, you need to write a book. And I thought, well, that might be something, because I'm lucky, too, where I've actually got photographs of me with a lot of these people, which at the time was rare because we didn't have cell phones kicking around when I was 15 years old. But I still have photos of me with Stevie Ray Vaughan and Johnny Winter and people like that. So the book idea, I thought, well, the first thing, you know, guys got to, you know, you got to kind of go through your memory banks and see what you can remember. And so that was the idea of the podcast was, you know, I'd pick a subject for every episode and just kind of hunker down, you know, and just over, say, the course of a week, just have a notebook with me. And, you know, every time something, I'd recall something of that person or that situation, jot it down, and then eventually get it on the podcast. So my kind of hope is that after I get, I don't know, maybe 40, 50 episodes, you know, maybe getting together with an actual writer and trying to see how we can put something together. So, but it's the recollections have been fun. And the things that I you know, I forget some of these things, you know, and then like I have my co-host, Scott James, you know, he'll ask me a question and all of a sudden I'll remember something different just from his, you know, so it's amazing some of the stuff that has happened in my life and career, and why not jot it down? People seem to be interested in it.
Well, it's always fascinating to hear these stories, and particularly with these notable musicians alongside yourself. And I mean, is there something when you're hanging out with guys like this sort of who you're mentioning there and all the stories that you told, like, do you find that all of them have a unifying tick essentially that you can kind of relate to? I mean, you've got happy bluesmen, sad bluesmen, alcoholic bluesmen, found Jesus bluesmen, all those types of things. But I mean, is there something from each of them, no matter who they are, how diverse they are, that you've kind of come to expect from anybody who's found fame as a guitar player?
Well, you know, I've heard the saying that you should never meet your heroes. because you might get disappointed. I haven't ever had that experience. I've been really lucky with all the people that you know, that I kind of looked up to, especially when I was younger, were always very nice and very inviting and very encouraging. But there was something I really made it, I'd go out of my way to meet these people, even if it was only for 5 minutes. There's something about looking them in the eye, having a connection, shaking their hand. If you end up hanging out later and having some drinks and whatever, that's great too. But I find it really inspiring, and I like to get to know what makes these people tick. And you're right about the bluesmen. I mean, some of them are all of the things you described at different points of their lives, you know? So there is things to learn from that as well.
Is there anyone that you haven't met that is maybe on the bucket list of those heroes, David, that you're dying to meet one day?
Well, probably Eric Clapton or Keith Richards. I haven't met any Rolling Stones, well, with the exception of Mick Taylor, and he was, you know, in my probably favorite era of the Stones. He was the guitar player for several years, and I opened a show for him a long time ago in Vancouver, and so that was kind of cool. But I've never met Mick or Keith or Clapton. That would be cool.
We'll pass on you. I'm sure they're due to be on our show very soon, David, with the demand we've got at the moment. So I'll pass on your details. You give me that sweater, I'll swap the details, and we'll hook something up there. One fun fact that was pointed out to me is that you used to list a fake agent and respond to queries yourself, but the fake agent you listed was listed as Murray Hewitt, which I'm sure some of our listeners may get that referenced. Tell me about this great idea, Dave, because I absolutely love this.
Well, I'm not a great negotiator. Like, I don't really like the business end of the music business, you know, but I have to wear many hats, especially the way the industry's gone in the last 20 years. So basically, I'm the band leader, I'm the guitar player, I'm the singer, I'm the booking agent, I'm the manager. But two things happen is, A, sometimes I feel awkward in negotiating. And also, sometimes you get approached by people for projects that you just don't want to do. So I don't want to seem like the asshole that's turning the project down. I needed someone to blame. I mean, that was part of it. And also, I tried to work with managers over the years and just never found anyone that really, you know, did a good job for me. I felt, you know, and no one's going to work harder for you than you. Plus, you look and you go, well, if I'm going to save myself the 15 or 20% commission that these guys charge, well, shit, that opens up a whole opportunity for me too, for gigs that maybe previously I wouldn't be able to do. That it makes a big difference.
For sure.
So, you know, and we live in an email world, in a text world. People rarely speak on the phone anymore. So I thought, I think I can pull this off. So I was trying to think of, you know, the name, because a cousin of mine, John Gogo, he used to have a fake agent named Ken Wrights, which just comes from fucking Wrights. we'll get Ken Wrights on this. But so I was a fan of Flight of the Conchords and you know, their horribly inept manager, Murray Hewitt. So I put that on my website for a long time. And you know what? Maybe twice people twig to it.
Wow.
Which was hilarious. You know, they go, oh,
twice.
Mr. Hewitt.
Wow.
Yeah. Most people are like, thanks, Murray. In fact, I've actually gone to gigs where people go, hey, I got to tell you, your manager, Murray, he's really on it. You know, he really responds quickly, and we've never had a problem. Like, they go, you wouldn't believe the problems we go through with most people's management.
Wow.
And the funniest thing was, I actually had a band, I think it was a band from Ontario, send an email to Murray saying, we noticed you've done a really good job with David Gogo, and we're looking to, you know, start our band and get on the road. Are you accepting any more clients at this time? And it was so tempting.
Them
on. Like, wouldn't that be wild to be the fake manager and make a commission up on
another
band?
You could have made that 15-20% you were talking about, extra money in your pocket.
Yeah.
You got to tell me, David, did you at least have band meetings with yourself, though, as Murray Hewitt? Did you sit down and kind of take roll call every single band meeting?
Present.
Present. Good. All right. Yeah, that's... I'm expecting to have nice posters next to your desk. You know, New Zealand, why not? I think we need an extra exclamation mark on that one. I'm seeing your own little show spinning off from that one. If people wish to hear the podcast from David, of course, search for Soulbender on all good podcast platforms. And if you want more information, listen to David's music, simply head to davidgogo.com, and also on Facebook, try and track down those t-shirts and you can wear them and look awesome this coming Christmas season. David, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you today. We'll definitely do this again at some point in the future, but thanks very much for your time on the Capital Daily Podcast today.
My pleasure.
Coming up, all the day's news, plus we pay further tribute to the late, great Eddie Van Halen. Next. The right choice of Hunter Douglas window coverings can keep your cool from Victoria's summer sun and instantly make over the look and feel of your home. Rafael and Brown Window Fashions have proudly represented the entire line of Hunter Douglas products for over 25 years and have grown to be one of the largest volume dealers in Canada. Visit rafael-brown.com for more details. To the day's news now, and police are investigating the suspicious death of a woman in her 20s found on the grassy median north of exit 51 of Highway 19 near Parksville. The RCMP did not say in their announcement whether the woman was struck, but a spokesperson later told Check that appears the woman is a victim of a hit and run. Central Vancouver Island Traffic Services and Collision Analysis and Reconstruction Service have been investigating on scene, and Oceanside RCMP are seeking information and dashcam footage. The federal court has dismissed the appeal of an industrial painter who was banned from working on Canadian warships because of his ties to gang members and drug traffickers. Billy Fitzgerald has worked at C-SPAN shipyard since 2012 and sought clearances in 2018 to be able to work on Navy frigates and submarines. But his application for federal and NATO security clearances were denied because he confirmed he was Facebook friends with what investigators said were high-level drug traffickers with links to Mexican cartels, the Hells Angels, and the Nortinos prison gang. His Facebook connections were also linked to at least one murder, and one was said to be the biggest player in the British Columbia drug trade. Due to his ties, Fitzgerald was considered a risk to overhear military information or be blackmailed by organised crime. And a unique situation has emerged in Europe, with orcas reported ramming boats near Spain and Portugal, possibly for revenge. Researchers have determined that most of the 22 attacks in the unprecedented wave that began in August are led by three orcas: Grey Gladys, Black Gladys, and White Gladys. Two of those appear to have been injured in incidents with boats earlier in the summer. And before we go today, it is of course Thanksgiving, and given we already have heard a bit of a tribute to the late great Eddie Van Halen, who of course sadly passed away last week at the age of 65, I thought it would be a great opportunity to be thankful for Eddie's great career and give you a bit of Van Halen to listen to today while enjoying your turkey and time with your family. So without further ado, here is some of the iconic Van Halen track Jump to really get you into a Thanksgiving Day mood. Declare that a Thanksgiving Day anthem from this point on. And that's it today for the Capital Daily Podcast for Thanksgiving, Monday, October 12th, 2020. Tune in tomorrow as we chat with UVic Assistant Professor of Economics and former Chief Economist for the Leader of the Federal Opposition, Dr. Rob Gillazzo, about the current election in BC and his thoughts on just how it all might play out. You won't want to miss it. My name is Ben Waterworth, and as they say in Australia, Happy Thanksgiving! Well, at least when the Australian is in a place that Thanksgiving is celebrated. Thanks for tuning in, and I will speak to you tomorrow. Today's edition of the Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by Raphael and Brown Window Fashions. Update your home by checking out this week's sale on a full selection of Hunter Douglas products. Visit raphael-brown.com for more details. The Capital Daily is currently seeking people experiencing homelessness to take part in a long-form story to document them over several months. In the story, participants will be required to be photographed, document the effects of homelessness, and be followed up on several months later to see the progress made in that time frame. If you're interested in this or know of somebody who would like to participate, contact Capital Daily reporter Anna J. James via anna@capnews.ca.